Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio, KGR. Radio Free Kentucky and Radio Free America. Tonight we're going to have a action-packed, live-action, interactive show. I'm your co-host, Clint, the Real Deal Hardy, and with me is the most esteemed co-host on radio, Pastor Matt Singleton. Welcome to the show, my friend. All right. Now we're going to go ahead and talk here in about 15 minutes to a candidate that's rising to the top, the cream of the crop here in Louisville, here in the Kentucky metro area. Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio, KGR, will warmly welcome a rising star in local politics, local civics. Shane Logan Rongstein is a bright, down-to-earth, savvy, and energetic person running for local office. We will delve into real solutions related to Southern Jefferson County, Louisville, Louisville metro area, and Kentucky. We also provide live, interactive, entertaining, continuing coverage of the 2016 presidential election. We'll delve into the latest Red Hawk current events, topics. Finally, we'll wrap up the end of the year show with some live music. Now, Matt, are you on with us now? Can we hear you?
Yeah, you can hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. So welcome, my friend. Now, you probably know what everybody is talking about, what everybody wants to talk about. It has nothing to do with what we'd normally talk about, which would be Christmas or the holiday season or the meaning of it or live music. But it is Star Wars, the highest grossing, not only in nationally but globally, opening weekend in history. So do you have any comments or thoughts about Star Wars 7, the sequel to Return of the Jedi, that, of course, was filmed over 30 years ago back in 1982 and released in May of 1983?
Well, basically, it was okay, entertaining, so I could, maybe look at this one or whatever. To be dead honest with you, not really a super Star Wars fan, and I think it promoted the pagan worldview, the New Age worldview of Joseph Campbell, and so I think it's really a disease upon society. But, hey, go for it. At least you got your, laser swords, right?
Well, I loved it. I watched it the third day it came out, so thus, we started out playing Star Wars. But it was interesting. I want to go ahead and go into a couple things. Star Wars, The Force Awakens, openly blasts away box office records. And I just talk a little bit about the culture. Star Wars, The Force Awakens, grossed over $250 million for the studio in U.S. and Canada through Sunday, the biggest opening weekend for a film ever. The film, the seventh installment of the Star Wars franchise, created by George Lucas, surpassed the prior record for an open weekend by Jurassic World, set just this past June, so just 6 months ago. J.J. Abrams directed the film, took an estimated $517 million at the box office around the world, second only to the international opening weekend set earlier by Jurassic World. So Jurassic World loses nationally but wins internationally. Opening weekend numbers are a vote of confidence for Disney, which purchased the Star Wars franchise for Lucas for $4.1 billion in 2012. The movie studio plans to release four more movies over the next 4 years, generating more than $25 billion in revenue from theme parks, toys, video games. The latest film, which some analysts expect to gross more than $2 billion, stars Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, and Oscar Isaac. Lauding the nostalgic throwbacks in the original series, audience gave the new release a grade of an A. according to the polling forum CinemaScore. It received a grade of an A+ among women, which is surprising, as well as an A+ from Score's audience under 18 and under age 25. The movie's impressive openings also shattered the opening weekend record for movies released in December, with audiences more focused on holiday shopping and travel. So I have two questions for you, Matt. One, what does it say about the culture when we have this movie in December, Star Wars, breaking box office records? And two, what does it say when the biggest movie is not about anything to do with the holidays, anything to do with the Christmas, but it's about the Force and it's about nostalgia going back 38 years into the 70s?
All right. Well, basically, it is, you know, as I said before, it is a pagan worldview that this promotes. But basically, I think that, you know, it is to be seen that this has been, you know, a anniversary type of, you know, coming out of the movie. So obviously there's going to be some push about that. But, you know, I think the last one they put out, and of course they kind of mess up the numbers a little bit. You know, you don't see the first movie, you saw the fourth, fifth, or sixth, and this episode goes backwards and that episode goes forward. So basically, the last episode that they put out, they had an interesting line where the disease of the Sith Lords, the ultimate evil, was to believe in absolute truth. That ultimately is, I can call it satanic because it's opposed. And I mean opposed, I mean the reverse, the opposite. What is considered to be evil in the Christian worldview is the opposite, where what is good is considered to be evil. If there is no truth, then, you know, you can't have something that's totally evil or totally good. Everything is relativism. And, you know, you have a watering down of truth. Now, I'll put it to you like this. There are people who may desire to do good things and people who desire to do bad things. But ultimately, evil is not evil. It's just a reaction. You know, once you get down to this type of worldview that is dualistic worldview, where it's just kind of there's the good side of the Force, or the not good. There is the light and there's the darkness and the dark side of the Force, and ultimately, you know, who's to say what? You have a very political reality kind of that gets put in. Everything is over dramatized in the politics, and that's the world that we have. That's the culture we have, where everything's become political. Everything's up for grabs because no one has an independent system anymore. You know, you can't just be a Muslim and live your life, or be a Christian or Jew and live your life, or be a atheist and live your life. Everything is up for grabs with this giant body politic, this empire. You know, and so America's becoming an empire. We relate to an empire. The empire strikes back, all that kind of stuff. It's all politicized because the soul of man is destroyed. There's nothing internal in us. There's no freedom in us. There's no responsibility in us. And so everything's up for grabs with the mighty empire. You know, and so you have everything's reverting back to the old pagan days. You have an empire politic with an empire religion. It's no longer a separation of anything. The only separation they have is the people that are against the empire. So it kind of says that you know, we have gotten away from American culture by getting away from Christian culture. American culture is no longer responsible, so it's not going to be accountable. And since it's not going to be accountable, then we're going to have this type of empire system taking us all over. And now we're slaves to our, you know, 3Gs or whatever, just sitting at home. We're not really making any reality. You're not, you know, going to make it out there outside in the world. No, all you can hope for is to be, you know, in the internet, making some quotes or something and buying entertainment and playing your video games. Maybe you can be a champion on your video game. That's what it is. You don't have freedom in the real world. Go and play your video game. Go, you know, watch Star Wars. Have fun.
All right. Speaking of empire, speaking of the establishment, the Republican neocon and warmonger, we're talking about the 2016 presidential wait. How is that as a nice little segue? Lindsey Graham, presidential candidate on the Republican side, ends presidential bid today. In South Carolina, Senator Lindsey Graham is ending his bid for the Republican nomination. Graham tweeted the news with the video of the announcement. Thank you to everyone who honored me with their support. Most of those support must be in South Carolina, but because he had polling at 0% throughout the campaign. God bless our fighting men and women, and God bless America. In an interview with CNN, Graham said, "I'm going to suspend my campaign. I'm not going to suspend my desire to help the country." Graham, a close friend of 2008 Republican nominee, GOP presidential nominee John McCain, one of the most prominent foreign policy hawks, war hawks in the Senate, has used his platform as candidate to advocate for more muscular U.S. military presence in the Middle East, critically citing dozens of trips to the region. "The centerpiece of my campaign has been securing our nation. I have offered a detailed plan to win a war we cannot afford to lose and turn back the tide of isolationism that has been rising in the Republican Party." Of course, Graham's whole idea is not in vital national interest, not to go after people who have attacked us, but to attack everybody everywhere before they attack us to keep us safe. Graham told supporters in an email today, Graham has been one of the toughest critics of Donald Trump. Early in the race, Trump gave out Graham's cell phone number during a rally in South Carolina. Given the low poll numbers, Graham has never had the opportunity to face Trump in a debate, never making the main stage in any of the Republican presidential debates. Matt, what do you think this means for everything that goes with the presidential race, as well as everything that goes with the neocons and the warhawks in the party?
Well, basically, Lindsey Graham's message has always been for a globalist military. What does that mean? It means that he wants America to be the world's police officer. He wants America to help the world be governed. And if it's governed, of course, we know that there will be one world government. That has been his lifelong dream, his lifelong mission. When it comes to the ideas of Islam and terrorism, I believe that Islam is a threatening religion. I believe that terrorists can be quite threatening and that they ought to be taken care of. But ultimately, I think that a nation should worry about its own self, that a nation should be worrying about governing itself. I don't want Islamic terrorism in my nation. Of course, I don't want Islamic terrorism in the world. I don't want poverty in the world. But just like America has to take care of itself, the world has to take care of itself. If America is successful because it is responsible and independent, and we need to encourage that message. But the message that we encourage the world to have is do the opposite of what made us successful. Be dependent. Be enslaved. Put your faith in an empire. And if you just put your faith in an empire, everything will be okay. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, we go out and we say, okay, well, we're going to fight the terrorists, but then, oops, some casualties come along, and oops, America now is hated by the world, and all these other different reactions, and oops, we're missing billions of dollars, and oops, we're also having great heroes lose their lives, and we're not really accomplishing what we wanted to do. You know, we were to secure Iraq, and I'll tell you this, I supported the war in Iraq all the way up 2006 and 2007 properly. In other words, I don't repent of not supporting it, or I don't repent of supporting it at the time that I did. It's just simply that was enough time, and then we should have moved on. And instead, we keep ourselves in skirmishes, and what do we get for it? The same territory gets covered by Muslims, and Christians are killed. That's not something that I want to support. I don't want to be playing around with Islamic lives, American lives, or our lives. Now, when we have to deal with actual issues, when people come onto our soil, yes, it is time. That's what it's for, and we take care of business. And we do not be merciful when it comes to securing our country and our nation and our people. That is what we need to do. And he says, well, you don't need to be isolated. Why? Why do I not want my country to be isolated? If you say the world is such a bad place, then yeah, I would like to make my country safe from evil. Okay? And the thing is that all we've done is we have given ourselves a bad reputation, just like we have economically and on other fronts. It's okay if there's really a threat. But otherwise, what are we doing? Our country doesn't own us, and so our country shouldn't play with American lives and American money. What?
I agree with you. All right. Our main guest on tonight, Mr. Shane Logan, who's running here in the Louisville Metro Council District 14 out here in the south end, southwest part of Louisville, Jefferson County, Louisville Metro area. Shane, welcome to the show. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself before we start talking about the race itself.
All right. I just want to say thank you all for having me on tonight. It's definitely a pleasure. Just to tell you all a little bit about myself, I'm born and raised down here in southwest Jefferson County, Valley Station. I'm running for Louisville Metro Council District 14. I'm running because this place is where I grew up, and we face so many problems that go ignored day in and day out down here. We're always the last ones to get anything done and out of the entire city. The East End, downtown, they're always coming first. And the people down here in the South End are tired of it. So I'm a youth pastor. I work in blue collar, mostly in warehousing. Now I'm in the packaging distribution. So that's a little bit about me.
All right, do me a favor. Let's start out and give your contact information at the beginning. We'll do so again at the end of the interview, but give them your website,
okay,
Twitter, and all that good stuff first.
All right. We don't really have a Twitter account. I don't even know how to use Twitter, so we use Facebook mainly. So if you go to Facebook, and you type in www.facebook.com/Shane Ranchart, that's RANSCHAERT, D14, that'll bring us up to your page. Then you can type in our website, which is www.shanerans.com. And then we're also contactable by our phone number at 502-650-6493.
All right, I want to go ahead and hit hot and heavy, and then Matt will get in here too, but we're going to do kind of round-robin questions, do a little bit different. What do you think is the three main issues, not in this race, but needs to be fixed in Jefferson County as a whole, as well in particular Valley Station, Cosmos Dell, and in the areas surrounding that, the three major issues facing us?
All right, first one right off the bat, it's the heroin epidemic. Used to be a small problem. It's the biggest thing that we've got going on down here in the South, and it's a hub for it. We've got dealers that are living out here, and we have people that have been murdered for it. It's my number one issue that I'm going after. Second issue, I would say it's better infrastructure. We've got many bridges. I believe it was 125 primary and secondary bridges that go over creeks and other things. And we've got a lot of bridges, especially one close to where I live, where you can, it was built back in 1938, that you can see the steel rebar and all the support columns. And then the third thing is the wasteful spending of our money across all of the city of Louisville.
Okay. In regards to infrastructure, and I also want to put in the drug problem, the heroin problem in particular, it's of course it's all over Kentucky, and in particular since they passed legislation regarding closing down the pill mills, shutting down doctor shopping, and starting Casper. But what can we do? What can you do as a Metro councilman? What can we do as a community? And I'm going to come to needle exchanges later, so hold off on that. What can we do as a community to help that problem, at least slow it down? And, of course, we just had a robbery not too long ago at one of the Dollar General stores that just opened 3-6 months ago. So could you speak a little bit to those two issues a little bit more?
Yeah. So heroin, it not only affects just the addict itself or the dealer, it affects everybody that person is around. So just like any of us could possibly be, can get easily addicted to something, whether that's alcohol or a drug. So what I like to tell people every time I'm talking to them is that if you know someone that is addicted to heroin, have a compassionate approach. These are people, they're hurting, they're addicted to the substance, and they need help. A man reached out to me. His name is Jack Hassler. His daughter was killed because of heroin. She wasn't a user, but they thought she was the person who stole money for her, so they killed her, and that man lost his daughter. So I'm working with him right now on starting a foundation that's going to be called Megan's Awareness. We're still getting everything up and running. We actually celebrated what we called Megan's Day, which was on her birthday yesterday, having a picnic in the park. But our goal is to open up a health center that provides addiction treatment, job training, and helping these people get back on their feet, get them stabilized again. But we as a community also need to be on the watch. There are telltale signs all around us of where a dealer lives. If there's always cars coming in and out, never the same car, 10 times a day, tons of people, that's a sign. Work with your neighborhood watch. See what these are going, and talk to your Metro Police and let them know. Now, as a council member, one of the things I want to do to address this heroin issue is, number one, we've got to make laws that increase the sentence for dealers and carriers of drug paraphernalia. They get a life sentence as is. The police out here will tell you, and they have in several meetings out here in the district, that if they catch someone with drug paraphernalia, they're only going to jail for a couple of days. If someone robs a house, that's considered more of a higher crime, so they're going to stay in jail longer. So we need a higher sentence and longer sentence. Unfortunately, that's going to put an unbearable, it's going to add some more weight to the taxpayer, unfortunately. Now, for better infrastructure, we've got to use our money wisely. Each district has a fund called the CIF, the Capital Infrastructure Fund. Now, each district, they have about $1 million in each part. So that's $26 million across the whole city. That's for infrastructure. That money is also turned around and put into an NDF fund for different things. So each council meeting, they all meet together and they appropriate money for each thing. So instead of the CIF money being used in the district, it's being used in other parts of the districts. I've got a printout for all the money that's been spent so far for District 14 for the capital infrastructure as well as the NDF, which is the neighborhood development. And we have tons of money that's going to the East End and downtown. What we need is we need someone, and it's my plan if elected, that we will stop that money from going to the East End and downtown and keep it in our South End.
All right. Let's get the co-host with the most, Pastor Matt Singleton. Come on in and make your comment and speak.
Hey, Shane, I appreciate hearing what you're saying. Honestly, I am a Valley Station resident. I live just a little ways, like a hop, skip, and a jump from my feet as far as, like, the highway is concerned. Two blocks away, somebody got shot and killed from where I live. Somebody got raped about 2 weeks ago before that. We've had issues of fires and all sorts of stuff going on in my apartment complex and stuff like that. Now, honestly, I don't get too threatened too much because, you know, if you keep your nose clean, you know, you generally don't get attacked too often. But basically, I do think also, you know, probably connected to what you're saying, not just the heroin thing, but also we deal with, I've noticed a lot of vagrants. You know, when I went to high school at Valley, I didn't see hardly any vagrants, but it has become kind of epidemic on Dixie Highway. I remember I was sitting in the car with my wife, and I was in the passenger seat. And this vagrant came up there and started begging for money in the gas station. And honestly, I cannot respect that. If you call your man to approach a woman that you don't know and beg them for money, I feel like that is threatening. But basically, there is a need for law enforcement. Although also, I think that, you know, I would encourage you to keep your eyes open for policies that might be more respectful of church activity and less restrictive. You might have seen some of this, Minister, but I've noticed how, like, certain churches are equally threatened. So if you say, okay, we're zoning and you can't advertise your church here, for instance, or, hey, we don't like it when people go door-to-door witnessing and stuff. Just little things here and there to keep your eyes open about, because I know that, you know, the biggest answer to this, and you're a youth minister, so if you're worth any of your salt, you're going to agree with me, that the gospel can definitely change a lot of this stuff. The government doesn't have to do anything,
mm-hmm.
just stop restricting certain things to let the church do what it needs to do to help the community.
Yeah, I completely agree. The gospel has definitely changed my life, and I can't even explain just how many ways, and the way I've seen it change other lives as well. And that's the thing. One of the things I would like to do if elected is I'm going to start a coalition of where we get the religious leaders from the community together, because they're our number one help. If we want to change this community, if we want to get down crime, if we want to get down gang activity, all these people are going to some religious institution, and it's a great way for all of us to work together for the greater good to lower some of this crime. I wholeheartedly believe that the gospel will change lives, without a doubt. So that's one thing I'm definitely in support of. But at the same time, I have to keep in mind that we do have a separation of church and state, so I can't just allow my faith, but I have to allow others' faith as well.
I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question relating to the Mayor Fisher, Louisville Mayor, Metro Mayor Fisher's plan about Syrian refugees, and of course Matt Bevin, Governor Matt Bevin's statements about being hesitant on that, and of course whole federal government issue. But what do you think about our current mayor's stance on Syrian refugees and the whole overall refugee system about what happened in San Bernardino and the, you know, the incident, the violent incident there?
All right. That's definitely a hard one you threw at me, but I'll be glad to answer it. For me personally, my opinions and thoughts on the refugees differ from quite a few other people's. We have to keep a couple of things in mind. Number one, we have absolutely no diplomatic relationship with Syria. Syria also doesn't keep track of any of its people. Excuse me. We have no way at all of getting a hold of these people's backgrounds at all. So we don't know anything about them. We can't pretend that we do. So the vetting process that we have, there's no way that we can vet them any certain way and find out anything about them. So we have to keep that in mind. Secondly, now as a Christian, I keep in mind that these are people that are fleeing their homes. This is a war-torn country. There are five different groups in Syria that are battling in that area: Iran, Russia, the United States, Turkey, and Syria. Five different groups of people, and they are trying to battle for the same land, battle for one of the groups in Syria themselves, and take control of that land and either topple a regime or put up a caliphate of an ISIS regime. So there's a couple of things going on there. Now, already, I'm going to go ahead and say it, we should all know that terrorism's already here in the United States, without a doubt. It's easy for them to come in through the border. We don't have a very secure border. Read an article the other day about this man who dressed up as a Muslim and got across from Mexico into the United States and Texas just because of how weak our border security is. So we have to strengthen our border security, number one. That's definitely a must. But as far as allowing refugees in, I'm torn between the two. I know that these people need homes. I would love for them to come to our country, get resettled, but they're going to have to be monitored. They have to be monitored. We need to know what they're doing because we don't know anything about them. But, again, they need some kind of help. If we can set up some kind of camp or some kind of place for them in their country that's going to be safe, I will wholeheartedly support that more 100%.
So if our only when I hear you, I'm saying what I hear you saying is you're not supporting the city administration and Greg Fisher's efforts to relocate hundreds, if not a few thousand, Syrian refugees and refugees from other related countries, Iraq and different ones in that area in the Middle East, here in Louisville. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, because we don't know anything about them. There's no way. We don't have any security measures that we can take to know if these people have been involved in Islamic terrorism or not. But just to go back to the San Bernardino shooting, we had no idea that those two people were involved in terroristic organizations until after something happened. We shouldn't have to wait until something happens for us to find out that they were involved in a terrorist organization. If we can somehow set up a place for them in their country or in their region, we need to support that 100%.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead, man.
I just like, the whole thing with the Syrian issue is something of Obama. Obama is totally to blame for all of it, absolutely all of it, because he's the one who said that he would act against Syria and then back down. He's also the one who said that we can leave Iraq and nothing will happen, and then they back down and ISIS got formed. And then now he's also the one who's trying to hurl all these Syrian refugees at us. And I would say that, honestly, I only see two solutions that are feasible, and that would be, A, that we could set up a camp either in an isolated part of the United States or in a territory of the United States, a camp where they can dwell away from, danger, or, B, that we would help them to go back and take their country back, because, honestly, the majority of these are men, not women and children, which is very bizarre in my mind as to why millions of men want to run away from their country. Millions of men need to get together and say, that's our country, you're not going to take it. But going back to it, we're talking about Metro Council here. And I would say there's two things I would want from my Metro Councilman. Number one, to say no to Greg Fisher about this particular aspect of the issue, but also the illegal immigration problem. I would say we need to get our city to be compliant with our federal laws about illegal immigration, because that is the job. We need to have citizens, not sub-citizens, that either A, take advantage of us, or B, get taken advantage of. And both of those happen. So I would say I would ask my Metro Councilman to watch his district about all the illegal immigration that could be coming in, and also to kind of say, this is what our city needs to be done. How do you feel about that part of the subject?
All right, so a lot of what we have going on here in the city of Louisville, and I don't know if you all know this, but I used to work for Metro Council. I worked for Metro Council for 3 years. So I've got some inside experience on just different matters and how things work. I worked for a Democrat, so what happens is if the mayor wants something passed, he calls that Metro Council office and says, hey, will you support this or will you support that? So he gets these council members to vote in his favor. So what this whole system is, and the only reason partisanship matters in the city of Louisville, is to say yes to whatever is in control, whatever party is in control. For Louisville, the Democratic Party has been in control for years and years and years, since about the founding of the Democratic Party itself. Excuse me. So what we have is we have a group of people, 17 members, who are Democrats and a Democrat mayor, and what it seems like has happened, especially for our end of the in the city, our council member, we only matter around election time because it's important that the mayor has someone that will say yes to whatever agenda he wants pushed or whatever the agenda that party wants pushed. So we need someone that will stand up to the mayor and that party. Now, we also have to remember that as Metro Council and as a city, we really don't have any control over immigration at all. And according to the Refugee Act, that is under the presidential control. So that's not something we really have something to do. So when the mayor says he wants to resettle someone, he really can't do that. That's a federal thing. That's not something that's local. Now, on a local level, we can pass legislation for housing, affordable housing. That's about it, though.
All right. Okay. I wanted to switch gears and talk about development, business development, small business, retail, et cetera, some of the abandoned business properties on the highway and the surrounding area. And then finally, I wanted to mention needle exchanges. Shane, if you need to get a drink of water, you can feel free to do that and come back. It's no big deal.
I've got one right here.
Okay. Well, then that's my two questions. One, how can we help with abandoned properties, business abandoned properties related to retail on Dixie Highway and the surrounding area, and not just Dixie Highway, but the all of District 14. And tell us a little bit about how we can possibly change or repeal the needle exchange related to, of course, it was put in effect because of heroin and the heroin epidemic in Louisville and really across the state.
All right. So I love these two questions. One of them we've got great plans for, and the other, the needle exchange program, I just hate it. But we'll get to the first and then talk about the later. All right, so for vacant properties across District 14, especially retail, one thing I want to do if I'm elected is I want to establish an economic renaissance plan for district per se. And we have a large need right now for businesses from the Salt River to the Gene Snyder. That's mainly a vacant stretch of the Dixie Highway. For those of you that are listening that don't live in the district or don't know the area that we're talking about, this area is a gold mine. It's Dixie Highway, it's a furrow all the way through the city, and it goes to Meade County, Elizabethtown, Radcliffe, West Point, Muldrow, Bullitt County, and Hardin County. It's a great place, great, a lot of people come through, Fort Knox travels through. There's a lot of opportunity for business development. So what we want to do, excuse me, is we want to establish this economic renaissance zone. So what that will do is we'll incentivize this entire area. So that means lower tax and cheaper utilities, and we'll do some landscaping and different stuff like that. and we're going to bring all the – and what it will do is it'll bring all these businesses in. We've developed our plan based upon what they're doing with the NOAA ARC encounter. So they're building this NOAA ARC replica. Answers in Genesis is, I believe, and they have this plan where they've done this exact same thing, and there's tons of businesses coming in, and it's growing the area. And even though the taxes are lower for these businesses, they send a tenfold increase in their tax income for that area. So that's going to generate more tax revenue for us as a district, and it's also going to bring in tons of businesses. A study was – there were two studies done about 10 years ago. The first study was on credit card usage. So with credit card usage, they did this study to see how much money is being spent here. Well, they didn't find much. What they didn't understand at that time is that this place was heavily – this area was heavily affected by the Great Depression. So with this Great Depression, people saved their money, just used cash, different stuff like that. So they did a study based upon cash usage, and they found out there's about $2 billion that's spent annually in this area. That's a lot of money. So we finally got that Cracker Barrel built, and that's led to a few other business developments. So that's what we're going to do, but we're going to do it right this time and establish this Renaissance zone. Now, the second thing, is the Needle Exchange Program. Now, I hate this program because what it does, and instead of fixing the issue, imagine that you've been shot. You've got this gushing, bleeding wound. All this is doing is putting a little tiny Band-Aid over this wound. That Band-Aid just getting soaked and covered up. It's absolutely terrible legislation that's not fixing anything. There's always a bigger picture to every issue. The bigger picture is we've got tons of people out here that have been hurt, that have lost tons of things. They were hurt and tons of things. Their lives have been affected. Their hopes and dreams have been crushed because of this epidemic. The only thing Metro Council is concerned about, it seems, is addressing the health risk, is preventing an HIV outbreak, which is a thing that does need to be addressed, but we have to address the bigger problem. You don't want to just work on the symptoms. You want to work on the main problem. The main problem, once fixed, will cure the symptoms. So this needle exchange program, what it's done is it's created more needles. So if I'm an addict and I want to get more needles, I'm going to go to this needle exchange place. The closest one for our district is at Lake Dreamland Station 1 on Canewood Road. So if I go up there and I take them one needle, they're going to give me five needles in return. Those needles aren't marked. They're not barcode. There's no way to track if they're getting those needles back. These people are not being given a safe cage to put their disposable needles in. So where are these needles going? They're going to wherever they're being shot up, street corners, bus stops, parks. I did a park cleanup back in July at the Greenwood Boat Dock, and the reason we did that is because the week before, a three-year-old boy stepped on a needle and contracted HIV. This needle exchange program, all it's done is provide more needles and put our citizens who are not users at risk of catching this disease. I think the program needs to be one for one and that the needles need to be tracked. Metro Council really doesn't have, at this time, any real data that's showing that this program has been successful as is.
Fair enough. And I think the last thing needs to be repeated that, you know, young child contracted HIV because of one of these needles, possibly from heroin, and that's disgusting and non-safe, and we need to really work on public safety. One is way too many. Matt, get in here and close out the interview.
I'm going to be honest with you, okay? If Metro Council cared anything about the spread of HIV, it wouldn't be promoting homosexuality among men in the public schools, because only 2 or 3% of our population is homosexual, but 67% of all HIV cases are from male homosexuality more than even him. But, you know, basically they don't care about social issues. They just want to kind of get the name recognition. And, yeah, I mean, that is so beyond bizarre. Oh, we're going to, like, help you with your habit, okay? I mean, first of all, I think that if the government gives needles, then the government should go to jail because they're giving away drug paraphernalia, okay? If they would have produced drug paraphernalia, then you put the office, you know, you social people in jail instead of giving them tax money. But anyhow, Shane, I really appreciate what you're coming in and saying. Oh, one more idea, though. We talked about this a couple years ago, and I still say, man, it would not only help out our neighborhood, but it would just be a whole lot easier than all the spending. Have you heard of the idea of a Valley Station bridge that would cost about $100 million versus the $1.3 billion that they work on with the Easton Bridge and all that kind of stuff? And basically we connect Indiana to Valley Station, and we would get a lot of our traffic focused here in Valley Station from Fort Knox and other groups instead of everything focused downtown. And, you know, downtown is clogged up, and we could help them unclog themselves by getting our business. What do you think?
All right. So with this bridge that you're talking about, the way that the Indiana side is, it's mainly in a higher, I'm not going to call it a mountain or hill. I like to call them knobs. That's what I grew up calling them. It's kind of lower. So there's not a lot of businesses. There's just mainly houses. So I think we need to keep that in mind when talking about a bridge from Valley Station to the Indiana side. I don't know if it's necessarily going to help us economically. What it's going to do is it's going to put a lot more vehicles and cars towards these people's houses. They're outside of a flood wall. So that area right there can't be developed for businesses for anything on the Indiana side. What it's going to do is create a leisure drive. Secondly, for a bridge that size, it's got to be built tall enough for barges to get through. And I don't know if it would be fiscally smart to build a bridge in our area. It would require for me to do a lot more research on it, for sure.
All right, fair enough. Matt, a response before we have him get his contact once again. Let everybody know.
Well, basically, you know, it would give us a connection to Horseshoe Casino and stuff like that. So I do think that there would be an audience. And even if you don't get the stores popped up there, then that's the whole point, and we could get the stores popped up here. And basically, you know, even though there's that road, I think there's other businesses and stuff that may enjoy doing that as opposed to making a good 45-minute climb all the way up downtown and then over.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's for sure.
Well, it's interesting all the way around. It was interesting how Hyda actually ran on the Southwest Bridge once he did a listening tour around the area in Valley Station, Cosmosdale, PRP. And back in 2010, there was actually a movement. People actually wanted the South End Bridge, the Southwest Bridge, to kind of draw some residents from southern Indiana. But, you know, your points are well taken. I just thought it was interesting that Hal Hunter lost that race by 6,000, and now he's Education Secretary in the Cabinet for Governor Matt Bevin. But I just thought that was an interesting point to make. Tell people once again, like you did at the top of the interview, how they can reach you and your campaign.
All right. Again, my name is Shane Ransart. I'm running for Louisville Metro Council District 14. You can reach us at our website at www.shanerans.com, or you can call us directly at 502
650-6493, or go to our Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/ShaneRanchart, that's RanchartD14. So, thank you all for having
all right.
me on.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah, happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you all as well. And may the force be with you.
Thank you.
I tell you what, Clint, I do appreciate the fact that, you know, we've needed some representation since Doug Hawkins left. And basically,
right.
if we can get something moving like this, you know, Louisville's been a cesspool. I mean, we're sitting here kicking businesses out right, left and right, and all the other counties are benefiting off that, and that's great. But, you know, what happens to the community
here
and let it fall into socialism and then all this crime and drugs and everything just destroy our families and homes? You know, I definitely think Shane is a good alternative.
I think so, and it's a great start. Like I said, he's a person with a lot of great ideas, vibrant, energetic, and, you know, that's why I'm glad to have him on the show. As far as candidates go, and somebody who is somebody who's well thought out and ready to be active in this campaign, we've found somebody that is, somebody who wants to run for Louisville Metro Council 14, wants to run out in the south end, southwest Louisville, and has a plan to fix it, and hope he can get... Well, I don't know if he'll have any challenges in the primary. Got that first, but if he doesn't have any challenges, it'd be interesting to see Cindy Fowler being who she is. We didn't really mention her, but we can always talk about her in the process. We've had Bob Hublin on, who ran against Cindy Fowler last time, the current incumbent, and talked a little bit about her in the past. But that'll be another time for another show. All right. Do you have anything you want to bring up? I've got two things I want to bring up before we wrap up the show tonight, our end of the year Christmas show.
So, like, how long is the program scheduled?
Well, the program's scheduled till 8, but I think we'll probably close her out here at 7 unless you have something that you want to move on with.
I mean, there's plenty of stuff to talk about. I'd like to say, as far as, like, the presidential races, since everybody's kind of focused on them when we had the last debate, I think that, you know, Donald Trump, he would be a better alternative to Hillary, but we have to really start listening to what he's saying, because the things he's saying is not, you know, the conservative dream. Honestly, if you really take what he said in his debates, he actually advocates for a nationalism, which I consider myself a nationalist. That's great. But he's a nationalist and a socialist. You know, he talks about, you know, when it comes to our property rights and, I forgot the old term that we use, when the businesses want to take over a territory, the government just gives it to them. Clint, what's the
name? Fascism. Okay. Communism is where they take it over. Fascism is you're allowed to own the business, but they basically tell you what to do.
Yeah, but domain, something domain.
Domain. Eminent
oh,
domain?
Yes,
eminent
domain.
Domain?
He pushes for eminent domain. He also talked about, you know, we talk about the issue of, like, well, maybe the Muslims shouldn't come over here and stuff, which there are some things that we talk about with, like, this terrorism system and stuff like that, but it blurs the lines, like, as if we don't know what the Constitution says. We're not here to make the government a religious test, you know. Then... what else does he say? He says, you know, we'll start doing some things with the Internet and, you know, kind of monitoring the Internet and controlling the Internet. All these things taking away some of our different liberties and constitutional liberties and things of that nature. So what you have is, he's like, well, it's okay, we're doing this for nationalism's sake. What you have is national socialism.
And what is nationalism and socialism? That's a technical word. What's a simple, quick way to say that, Clint? What does that mean when we say national socialist?
Oh, fascism?
Well,
Nazism?
Nazi. National socialism is Nazi. That's exactly what it is intended to mean. Now, fascism is very, very similar to Nazism. The only difference would be Nazis focus on patriotic national traditions, things like that, whereas in fascism would focus just on business and stuff. So they're very close, very similar. Hitler and Mussolini got along together splendidly or whatever. They do bump heads occasionally. But basically, it's an alternative socialism is what we're kind of looking at. And honestly, yeah, the communism that's starting to grow in our country needs to be dealt with. And so, yeah, you could, might have that alternative, but you're still going for a big government that intrudes on our liberties. And it's really sad because there's a lot of liberty-loving people who have been hoodwinked into this whole situation. They're like, you know, I'm a nationalist libertarian. You know, I want my country back, and I want to care about my country and not do these things. And so his campaign sounds good, but, you know, in the long run, it's not going to help us. And even worse, you think if I'm making these connections, guess who else is making these connections? Are we, you know, once it starts, you know, making some comparisons with Nazism and what Trump is arguing, where is it going to end when it comes to the big presidential debate? You know, is he even going to get it at that point? So, you know, it's stuff we ought to consider. Honestly, you know, the way the electorate goes, now I vote, you know, Republican 99 billion percent of the time, but basically I've not voted for a Republican president the last two elections because they weren't truly conservative. And honestly, they can run their mouths about, well, what about practicality? Well, the practicality is I'm in a Republican state. It's not going to change no matter what I do. So basically the electorate is already counted, so I'll just vote my conscience. But basically, you know, we need to push for a candidate that, you know, is electable. And I am okay with Ted Cruz as a presidential candidate. I have more sympathies for Rand Paul. And obviously, you know, the pragmatic game has to go on, especially when you got 15 or 16 candidates. That's one good thing. At least Lindsey Graham is out of there. So, you know, that kind of gives us a little bit more elbow room. But, yeah, basically, I'd rather have Ted Cruz than Donald Trump or Marco Rubio or any of them. And, you know, Ted Cruz is for a lot of good things, and, you know, he doesn't have an absolutely perfect record, but he's somebody who actually has done things in the government that are conservative versus Trump, who has supported many, 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 many Democrat liberal things all his life.
Right, I hear you, man. What? I said, right, I hear you, man. It's interesting all the way around, you know. What can we do? What can we do to change things? Trump's definitely not the person to go with. And the fact that he's so high in the polls, I just don't see likely voters coming out for him. I really don't. I truly don't. Not in the Iowa caucus, not in New Hampshire primary. The same people who voted for Rick Santorum, the same people who voted for Ron Paul, and the same people who voted for Mike Huckabee, they're not coming out for Donald Trump. They're just not going to. So these are not of caucus voters or primary voters in the early voting states. They're really not. A couple things I want to mention. One, if you want to reach Governor Matt Bevin, you can do so by going to his webpage, governor.ky.gov. You need to do that if you're in Kentucky to get your name out there. Some of the things that have happened in the Kentucky governor's office since we were last here, Governor Matt Bevin names three key appointments to the governor's office.
Catherine Gatewood Easley will serve as Deputy Chief of Staff for External Affairs. Jessica Ditto will serve as Communications Director. Stephanie Nelson as the Director of Scheduling. So she's going to be a very important person in the new governor administration of Matt Bevin. Catherine, Jessica, and Stephanie are important appointments for our administration as they bring extensive experience and depth to our team. As we focus on solving problems and improving the lives of all Kentuckians, they will be instrumental in ensuring that our team is accessible and effectively communicating with the public. As Deputy Chief of Staff of External Affairs, Easley's focus will be ensuring that programs communication foster a greater understanding of Governor Bevin's agenda, his administration, and its mission. Easley has served as Communications Director for Congressman Adam Kitzner of Illinois, Andy Barr of Kentucky, Bob Gibbs of Ohio, and previously worked in the congressional offices of Congresswoman Ann Northup and former Senator, U.S. Senator of Kentucky, Jim Bunning. In addition to her time in Capitol Hill, Easley worked on political campaigns and was in the private sector. Ditto joins the administration having served as Communications Director from the Bevin Hampton campaign team in transition office. She has more than 10 years of political and public sector communication experience. Prior to the campaign, Ditto was Director of the Education Program Operations for the national nonprofit Connected Nation based in Bowling Green, Kentucky. She has worked for Kentucky Governor Ernie Fletcher, the Republican Party of Kentucky, Oklahoma U.S. Senator James Inhofe. She resides in Lexington. So that tells you a little bit about what's going on in the Bevin administration and how to get a hold of them. Matt, any comments?
I just wanted to ask, now, our friend Adrian, now, she got married, so I forgot her new married name.
Adrian Southworth.
Adrian Southworth. What is her position now? Because we know she got hired.
Right. She is no longer the moderator of Take Back Kentucky. She stepped down at that position on December the 12th. She took over as the Deputy Chief of Staff for Lieutenant Governor Jeanine Hampton here in Kentucky on Monday morning, December the 14th. So she's been in that. This was her sixth day today.
I'll tell you what, that's amazing, because we know someone here who basically she might be even more conservative than me and Clint, and that is, like, you know, something of supernatural proportions to say somebody's more conservative than me and Clint. But basically, she's a strong Christian, a strong constitutionalist, a strong woman altogether. I mean, she's kind of skinny. I don't think she's a powerlifter, but, you know, basically, just amazing, you know, the idea that she's going to be in there, and not only with her office, but also with her views, with her high-level intelligence and charisma. I think that she's going to make an impression on people and really, you know, start cleaning this place up. I mean, she knows the insides and outsides of the Frankfurt government machine more than anybody else. So I really am just thanking God that a woman like that is now in office and going to be helping with our candidates.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a great thing for legislation, for liberty, watching out for administration regs, the bureaucracy and the executive branch. Before, it's really a complete 180. It's a sea change. It is a new day. We've got a lot of good people, especially she's a good person in there. There's a thing I'm going to skip because it's kind of over and over again, just to mention that Congress clears the $1.8 trillion tax and spending bills. It's just old hat. It's basically just the vote the majority of people out. Over 300 Congress people, you know, the majority of Republicans voted for it. They need to go. And in the Senate, a minority of U.S. Senate Republicans voted for it.
If you don't know what it is, study up on it.
Talk about the omnibus
like, yeah, the $1.8 trillion spending bill of the $4 trillion. You kind of get tired of harping on the same things, and I feel like going into the seventh year of the show, bringing that up is just would bore our listeners. But it's a really bad bill, and we didn't get a whole lot. That's why I talk about the state legislature and the governor a whole lot better. If you want to also contact Governor Matt Bevin, you can do so by writing to him. It's 700 Capitol Avenue, Suite 100, Frankfort, Kentucky, 40601. Or you can call the governor. Obviously, he probably will be busy at events or other things, but they'll have secretaries there to answer your phone. The main line is 502-564-2611. The hard of hearing line is 502-564-9551. And if you want to contact the governor via email, you can do so at governor.ky.gov/contact.aspx. So that's governor.ky.gov/pages/contact.aspx. And like I said, you can always pause the show and listen to it again. Matt, you're welcome to continue on. I'm going to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and thank everybody for being with us tonight. And if you want to bring up something, I will be happy to listen to it.
All right. Well, one thing I want to say is, you know, our mission with Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio has been, instead of to be global thinking, is to be local thinking. In other words, we want to make a difference with what we have the most potential to make a difference with, and that is local elections, local community activity, and, you know, just basically local government. So what we've done is we've been doing this for the past almost 7 years now, and here we are. You know, the Tea Party was just starting. I mean, it was, you know, just an inkling of an idea. It was a party. It was like not a political party. It was just a, hey, let's get together for April 15th and our, you know, protest this stuff. So we went from that to now having a government that is now having Tea Party representation just about as much as Republican or Democrat representation. We are now finally influencing our state, as we said, that was what our mission was. Now, honestly, we haven't been able to make the big money impact. You know, big money kind of just didn't really look our way, and we're just regular citizens. You know, me and Clint are just regular people, but we have a voice, and we have brains, and we started talking about it. And, you know, honestly, even if we haven't had a widespread view, just as many leftist organizations are small and yet affect so many, I think we have affected many. I think that our thinking has helped out the thinking of other leaders and other big people, and people have been taking those ideas and making them bigger. So basically, it is a thing that we celebrate here for this year, the triumph of the work. And I'll even say the ministry of KGR. And ministry, by the way, is a word that's applied to government officials as well as to church officials. So that's why I say it's okay we call KGR a ministry. But, yeah, the service of KGR has done great things. And I have been working on the field issues of apologetics. Now, one thing that we have to understand, when we say separation of church and state, you have to understand that separation of church and state does not mean separation of Bible and state. Our government officials have to do what is morally right and true. And so they must be convinced what is morally right and convinced what is true. And I think a lot of people get confused on that, and they think, uh-oh, we're mentioning Christianity. No, hold on. Because our society has been dominated by the religion of humanism. Our government operates on this humanistic philosophy and spends billions of dollars on promoting humanistic philosophy, which tears people apart. Why do we have a drug epidemic? Because people have issues that they are not taking to their church, so they take it to their medical doctors, they go to pills, and then what happens? Okay? Before people were on heroin, what were they on? They were on all these painkillers. You see, they think that a physical pill will help their heart, their immaterial heart, that is. It don't work that way. And so we have this psychology-based, medical-based, evolution-based, drug-addicted society that is criminal and basically falls apart and needs socialism to guide the way, socialism to be the new Messiah. And that's why we're in the problem that we're in. We need governors. We need government officials to have a Christian worldview, regardless of whether they put, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with what they do with the church or do with the state. It matters in how they know the truth in order to operate in the truth. We cannot let our government officials think that, A, evolution is true, and B, we believe evolution is true. Those two things must be eliminated. We must operate from a biblical worldview. And so I have been working. I made about 28 different articles, which I think I'll publish in about, I think about four big books. And I'm working on publishing and stuff like that. But I've already got it on the internet, logged out, linked up, so that we can, you know, show the evidence philosophically, logically, scientifically, and historically beyond the really good theology to help them understand what the true worldview is in order that they can vote from a true conscience. And I encourage them to take that information using my free speech. And we need to do that. We need to inculcate our society, and we have to start from the top down when it comes to this education. We have to educate our leadership and then move on from there. Because if we don't, then there will always be an excuse why to steal our money, steal our freedoms, and abuse our families. So with that, I guess I'm going to go ahead and turn it in for tonight. You are listening to Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio. Have a blessed evening. And we encourage you to check out our archives and kind of go through all the things that we've learned with our society and our culture from that point there. So we'll see you all later here on KGR. Bye-bye.